This is the EWN Radio Network. You're listening to Felicia Lee on the EWN Radio Network.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Jumping the Gap Radio Show. This is your host, Felicia Lee, and today I am thrilled to have Madeline Shaw from LunaPads with me, and she's going to be sharing with our listeners today her journey in building a million-dollar company. For any of you who are new listeners to our show, in this show, we talk about what is required to build a seven-figure business. And so every week, I interview a woman business owner who has either founded or built or run a million-dollar company, and we talk about the landmines that they've gone through, the lessons that they've learned, and ultimately what keeps them going and what keeps them invested in the company that they're running. My mission through this radio show is to give you the backstage pass and peel back the curtain so that you can be inspired and equipped with practical strategies to grow your own business. What I know for a lot of business owners is that what got you here today likely isn't what you need tomorrow. So we are going to help you jump the gap to build your own seven-figure business through all the learning from our show today. And so I am excited today because we have Madeline Shaw as a special guest. So let me tell you a bit more about Madeline. She is a social entrepreneur known for her longstanding commitment to progressive business practices and gender equality. And so Madeline is the co-founder and creative director of the East Vancouver-based LunaPads, which is an e-commerce retailer that specializes in natural personal care products, as well as United Girls of the World, which is a registered nonprofit society that has supported the provision of sustainable hygiene supplies to over 3,000 girls in 18 developing nations to support their school attendance. United Girls is also home to G-Day, which is a national rite of passage event series that celebrates and empowers girls as they enter adolescence. In Madeline's spare time, she enjoys yoga, walking, mentorship, motherhood, travel, and stirring up revolutions. I just love that. And so you can tweet Madeline at O Madeline. So that's O-H-M-A-D-E-L-E-I-N-E. Well, Madeline, welcome to our show, and I love that you are always stirring up revolutions on a daily basis. Welcome to our show today.
Thank you so much, Felicia. Yeah, it's been my favorite thing to do for a really long time.
And so why don't we get started? I think that if you live in Vancouver, you certainly know about Madeline. But for some of our listeners who are tuning in from all across the country and in different countries, would you share with us a bit about yourself and your company? Tell us about what LunaPads is, and also, how did you ended up finding this company?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Felicia. And I want to start by actually going back to the first part of the bio where you said I was a social entrepreneur, and I definitely own that expression, but I want to kind of go a little bit deeper because it sort of helps to explain of how I got my start in the business world, which is that I did not plan on being a for-profit entrepreneur or business person ever. And in fact, as a university student, was very much more of a revolution starter. That's where it all started for me. And that's really where I got my first ideas about social change leadership. And it wasn't until several years later, when I was thinking about, career options in my early 20s, that the notion of entrepreneurship even occurred to me. And so basically my original inspiration for becoming an entrepreneur was that I recognized that business had a wonderful ability to sort of be a vehicle for a social change agenda. So in other words, bringing a market-based approach to a social change mission was really what it was all about, and still largely is what it's all about for me. So I think that's sort of an important concept. Like a lot of people, there goes my phone. A lot of people think that, the classic entrepreneur is you see a market gap or something like that. And sure, that was part of the mix, but really the original inspiration came through wanting to see social change. So it's probably worth talking about that. I'm going back over 20 years now, so I'm not new to entrepreneurship at all, but I started originally because I became concerned with the health and environmental implications around disposable feminine hygiene products. In other words, that, you know, just the ubiquitous pads and tampons and panty liners that, you know, most women use and believe that they need to use because there aren't really a lot of options out there, started becoming of concern to me personally because of just some health issues that I was experiencing that turned out to be related to those products for me. And then when I woke up to that, I was like, wow, what is up with these products? I hadn't really thought about them much before. They just seemed like a really basic consumer choice that I didn't really have a lot of choice around, that, you know, as a young woman who out and about in the world and just having my regular menstrual cycle was just, okay, I need to use these products. And so when it came to my attention that, in fact, they were not good for me and that I needed to find a different way, it sort of sparked this idea around changing the conversation around menstruation and fertility in general. So thing number one, and as a feminist, that was sort of important to me. It's like, wow, women need to feel better and more empowered around their bodies. And so this weigh-in through empowering and changing the conversation around menstruation, which, by the way, is super relevant given what this media storm that we're seeing around Heather Watson in the Australian Open, you know, tournament and the tennis player. Anyways, we can come back to it.
Yes.
But so I thought if I created products that were kind of alternative that could be reused instead of thrown away, that it might be an interesting, well, A, business proposition, but B, way to change the conversation around how we feel about our bodies in that respect.
I love that. And Madeline, I also loved what you said about how for all, I think today's episode is going to be really relevant for, especially for our listeners who are maybe social, you know, they're change agents and they're social agents. And I think that your story about how not only are you an active voice, but you've also built a business that can ultimately then, you know, make that bigger impact through the vehicle of business for social change. I'm excited about our episode today. And so, Madeline, would you share with our listeners on, you know, the milestones across the years? I you know, in your early 20s, you mentioned you thought of this idea and then you started a company to today, it's a $1 million company with, you know, products sold internationally all over the world. What are some of the milestones that you've reached along the way through the company?
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, it bears counting out all those years to begin with. Like, I guess my first observation is that I would say that my pattern in business has been a bit of a slow burn, that, you know, often we think about the, you know, hockey stick growth and all of that kind of thing. And in my case, I've actually cycled through a couple of different iterations of the business. So in the beginning, you know, I was just by myself probably for about the first year or so. And then I bought a garment manufacturing business actually that I was using to have the products made and operated that as well as a retail store for about 3 years. And it was after that when I went sort of out on my own again that I did two things that happened that were really, really significant. So just, you know, the retail space was not really for me. I didn't make a lot of money, but I learned a lot. You know, I learned a little bit about, you know, garment production and that kind of thing, and it was a good exercise. I survived, I guess, would be the best way of putting it. Okay, cool. And but in 1999, two things happened. Number one, I had our first online e-commerce enabled website, which in 1999 was pretty early days for e-commerce. And I still remember going to the office and there'd be like maybe one or two orders that had come in overnight, and I'd take, you know, process the credit card stuff manually, and I'd, you know, and then I would take the orders down to, you know, my office was at downtown Vancouver, let's just say, and then I would walk the orders down to the main post office at Georgia and Hamilton and stuff. And so I would say that was kind of a big deal. Like, it was like, huh, this is really amazing. Like, people who I've never met in my entire life are just going to buy something based on seeing a picture of this thing on a website. And how interesting is that? You know, like, that's really kind of wonderful because it felt sort of effortless. Like, it felt like I hadn't, you know, actually done anything, which is not true, but still, it was wonderful to discover that. And the second thing that happened was that I met my business partner, who you know, Suzanne Siemens, and really that changed, I would say that changed my life and my business life more than any one thing has ever done. It was actually meeting her and realizing that there could be someone to help me who had complementary skills, who I trusted, and that was willing to really commit and build this with me. So that's second major piece. After that, it was actually taking on investor partners. And so we took on a little bit of venture capital, to tell you the truth, and which sounds very exotic and whatever, but actually it's a local firm called Renewal Partners who invest in sustainability-minded impact, you know, social impact type businesses like Lunapads is. And that brought not just money, it brought us into this remarkable network that is loosely called the SVI or Social Venture Institute community in Vancouver, and it's far broader than Vancouver, but in Vancouver it's incredibly vibrant social and well, gosh, I mean all kinds of educational opportunities sort of spring out of that. So early days, so within my first 5 years being in business in the first place, I found a partner, got some capital, and then, you know, became a member of this incredibly well-resourced kind of community that has served me incredibly, incredibly well. And after that, there's been all kinds of, I wouldn't even know where to start. There's been awards, there's been, you know, different thises and thats. But, and actually, you know, another thing I would point to as a milestone was actually Suzanne and I, so early days, we took their, you know, we got our hands on like $100,000 basically, and which at the time was just huge. And it just was like, wow. And we actually thought our business strategy should be to attend large natural products trade shows in the United States and sell to American, basically health food and natural products distributors who would then sell to retail stores. And that was the way we were going to scale, right? So getting these piddly, you know, half a dozen at this point orders online every day was not really going to knock it out of the park. And what we needed to do was go and play the big game down there and spend the money and kind of, you know, get listed in big, you know, retail chains and that kind of stuff. So we spent a lot of money on that strategy and it didn't work. And we came back to our main kind of contact at Renewal Partners and sat down with him and said, you know, geez, really sorry. Thanks for the money. We've spent it. And our, you know, our business model's not working, and, you know, sorry, what do you think? And he said to us, he's such a great guy named Joel Solomon, and he said, you know, you guys, like, I can't in good conscience as an investor invest anymore in a business model that isn't working. Like, you know, I'm not gonna bail you out. And I believe that knowing the two of you, you have the smarts, like you actually know the answer, you know what you need to do. And if you don't know it right now, I want you to go back to the office and put your heads together, sit down, make a cup of tea and just talk it through and decide what you want to do. And so with that, I mean, what was really important in that story was it's kind of tough love, but it was somebody really, you know, really saying, I believe in you. And so sure enough, we came back to the office and we decided to invest our last, probably it was about $5,000 or something we really only had to work with. And we built a new website and up to the, you know, sort of latest and greatest, you know, circa 2001 e-commerce. And pretty much, it's oversimplifying it to say this, but we've pretty much never looked back. Like that was a true turning point in the business with respect to strategy and going from like, ah, to like, woohoo! So there you go.
I love that. And Madeline, would you tell our listeners also and share with them, where's the company today? And I know that that was a pivotal shift. In fact, a lot of your sales these days come through your online, and that's become the main business model for you. And would you share with our listeners a bit more about, you know, what is the life of Madeline like today and, you know, in your company today? And where's the company today and where is it going?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, we're freshly into the seven-figure club, and we just hit that at the end of our last financial year, and so which ended at November 30th. And so, but that gave us a lot of energy, and I should say, like, some things that people know is that I'm the co-founder and the creative director. Okay, that that sounds pretty okay, but, you know, a creative director, like, what does that person actually do, which is a very good question. And I should point out that the CEO of the company is Suzanne and has been for the last couple of years. So it's really under her, like, primary leadership that we've been able to, you know, pass this milestone. Like, I've absolutely helped, but my role now within the company is very... I'm very much just kind of like a very senior advisor to her, basically, and, you know, kind of hold, I would say, the vision of the company, and am here to sort of support people and give people energy and that kind of thing, and, you know, feedback if people need it. But really, the operationally speaking, I don't have a particular, like, make or break sort of role happening at Lunapads anymore. And even though I know everything that's happening here, and it's fun, and which has actually enabled me to kind of take on a whole other realm of leadership that I'm happy to come. We can either pursue that now, or we can come back to that later in the conversation. So, but just to flesh that out a bit more about where Lunapads is now, is that so we just passed the $1 million mark, and super awesome. What that looks like from a revenue perspective is, and I should add that we are profitable. And that is a really big deal. So 2014 was a really, really big year for us in that we had struggled with profitability, like just really borderline for since around 2009 was the last year we really had some good news on that front. And then we were, you know, kind of like iffy. And then 2014, we really turned the corner. And what was nice is that we did it with respect to the revenue and the margin, and which really was like, okay, there's the magic formula, because it's one thing to be in the $1 million club, but if you're not profitable, then it's like, ooh, you really want to work on that business model before you start scaling it. And the vast majority, like 80% of our revenues come in online. And that is really something. And I should add to that that we have we're operating in Canadian and U.S. dollars, and that we have not just consumer business going on online. We have whole other just wholesale websites. So we're supplying, you know, our proprietary products as well as other. We're acting as distributors for other products in a way that is just completely invisible to most consumers, but that's the way a lot of retailers are ordering from us as well. So, you know, it's diverse in terms of the revenue streams, but what's interesting is that it's being powered and processed primarily online.
I love that. And so, you know, Madeline, one question that comes up to me right away is I feel like our listeners might be, again, along this journey on thinking about how they're going to expand their business. And, you know, they also want to build a seven-figure business. And there's, like you said, there's many different ways to do it. You can do it via trade shows. You can add products and services, you know, from a wholesale model. You can kind of do an online model. You can bring on a partner to help you out. And so there's different areas of expansion. Now, for you, how, you know, what would you suggest to our listeners, you know, how should they figure out what's the right path to take? Thoughts on that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think it really depends on the kinds of products that you're selling. Like, you know, for example, let's say you're selling, you know, giant one-of-a-kind crystal chandeliers. Well, I wouldn't necessarily recommend e-commerce, you know, for example, right? Like, right. You may want to have that as, you know, part of, I mean, I definitely think, you know, you've got to have a website no matter what. E-commerce is a slightly different proposition, and I think it's better suited to some types of products than others. The game you play with the whole wholesale distribution model is one that you need to be very well capitalized for, I would suggest, and you really need to know what you're doing with respect to marketing. So it's not just, you know, I think a lot of people think that if only they could get their product in Whole Foods, let's say, or in the Bay, or, you know, whatever, then, you know, they kind of got it made. And that's an illusion. Like, there needs to be marketing support that goes along with that supports it. And that marketing support is really expensive. And so I like for people who, you know, maybe you're just starting out, I think the online thing is essential. And again, that doesn't just happen by itself either. You know, you've got to think about your search engine optimization. You've got to think about what, you know, just what's the feedback, what's your social engagement looking like, because that takes a huge amount of time. Like, I guess above all else, I want to, you know, this whole journey has not been easy. And for anybody out there who is looking kind of for the quick win, I think you can have quick wins, but only if you're, like, really experienced. It's almost like that, you know, preparation meeting opportunity is what luck actually is, according to, I believe, Oprah Winfrey. But and so in terms of business models, I mean, sometimes there's trial and error. Like, we learned a lot. And, in fact, that wasn't, you know, trying to get into the whole U.S. Wholesale distribution world, we actually went back and tried it again and got burned again at around 2007. And, I mean, granted, the timing was terrible, but we were acting on advice from, you know, people who we thought were really smart and who said that you guys got to go big, you got to scale, you got to grow. And so that was the best way we could think of to do that. But we, again, we weren't really ready, and our products are, they're still a bit unusual, you know, and they still make some people kind of scratch their heads. And so, for example, let's say, you know, you're in London, let's say you're in London Drugs, and where you can coincidentally buy Luna Pads. Most feminine hygiene products, like, people aren't just going, oh, what brand will I buy this month? Like, it's a very specific consumer choice that is a destination product that people will just go and get, and they're not kind of, you know, necessarily shopping around to see what's new or do I feel like buying this today or whatever. It's like, you know, it's driven by a whole other set of values. And so if I think about, you know, the shelf presence, it's like we can't, you know, if you see Luna Pads, they cost like five times as much as disposables, and that's because they last for 5 years, not 5 hours, and ultimately save you a ton of money. But if it's like this sort of, you know, purely price comparison on the surface of things, then we lose, you know, and you don't have a lot of real estate there to explain, you know, why would you want to choose this? What are the environmental benefits? What are the health considerations? It's like, I've got about, you know, I believe our boxes are about 3 inches wide, you know, and to actually communicate that to the customer is really challenging, which makes retail challenging.
Yeah, I love that you shared that. And so you have to think about, I think it's a combination of, you know, how would someone get to know your product, and does it need to be demonstrated? Does it need to be explained? You know, are they just buying a simple widget where they just, you know, they get what they get? Or is it something that really there's an educational process? And so then you've got to pick the channel to, you know, that can match the level of explanation or the level of education that is needed in order to properly communicate the value of the product. So I love that, you know, and I know that also, want to chat a bit about, you know, in terms of also, I know that you, being a social entrepreneur, that in addition to business, that, well, it's actually the business supports the social aspects of the social change aspects of the company. And so would you also share a bit about, you know, how do you balance between, you know, efforts spent on building the soundness of the business principles, if you will, from a kind of a capitalistic type of view, versus, hey, you know, we exist for a different reason. For you, any thoughts that you want to share with our listeners in terms of how you balance between building a profitable business versus, hey, I really, my heart is in the social change part. I really want to, you know, spend a lot of time there or spend a lot of the resources there. What do you think is there a right way, or how do you decide what's the right, you know, what's the right percentage for someone?
Yeah, so, well, you being you, Felicia, the incredibly astute person that you are, have just pointed to one of the most central tensions of Luna Pads, and it's a wonderful, really rich question that even now, like even like seriously yesterday, Suzanne and I were talking about this. And so, you know, for example, yeah, I mean, we literally, you know, part of the reason we struggled with profitability is because we give away tons of, in fact, I can tell you exactly where a huge chunk of our margin goes, and that is to providing girls in the developing world with washable menstrual pads to allow them to attend school. And like, so that's part of, you know, as part of our business practice, we give away money to help girls have products, you know, that are comparable to Luna Pads, but that in this case are made typically in Uganda. And the figure that you actually quoted, you were off by a couple of zeros. It's not 3,000 girls. We've actually helped supply over 300,000 girls with products to stay in school. Yeah, so in a way, I mean, if you look at that, you're like, okay, you guys are not a business, you're a charity, and I guess that's why they call it social enterprise, right? But when we think about, like, our notion of profit, like, we really do factor in social profit. Like, we really think about it, and I really believe, like, the conversations I find the most interesting in my mind, and we do have a nonprofit organization now that we also lead, in addition to Lunapads, and I can talk about that more later. It sort of depends on how you think about it. It's like, what are you trying to do with your business? And in our case, like, we're trying to, A, help girls stay in school in the developing world, so that's a really big one. We're trying to help our customers here feel really great about their bodies and be healthier and save money and have more environmentally responsible kind of consumer behavior and that kind of thing. And I think we're also trying to redefine what business is and does and is for. Like, you know, and sort of questioning the model of, like, okay, we're just going to, you know, build this business making whatever we want and selling it, and then, maybe we'll take some of that excess profit and cut a check to a charity. You know, and that's one model, and
right. There's
not necessarily, you know, there's nothing necessarily anything wrong with that at all. And we just kind of feel like the definitions around what profit even means and this kind of binary idea that we have between for-profit business and social profit, nonprofits and charities is something that's worth questioning, because I think that there's a lot of room for the two types of organizations to learn from one another, and also, yeah, because it's, and to tell you the truth, neither of them are working very well. It's almost like businesses are not yielding enough social and environmental benefit, and charities, for their part, could have a way bigger impact. And so how might that, you know, those two aims be achieved by, you know, being a little more fluid between how those are structured and viewed. And so those are some of the questions that we ask ourselves a lot. And I don't think we have the answers, but I think that we're a lot closer, like, at least we're asking the questions, you know what I mean, and really, like, getting in there and experimenting under the hood to see what can happen, and not just kind of taking it for granted that things need to be a certain way, because they don't. Like, to me, that's one of my favorite things about being an entrepreneur, is, like, there's incredible freedom in it, like, incredible. And, okay, you know, don't do anything illegal, and, you know, but everybody else is operating under those rules. But within that, in terms of how you define yourself and what your organization actually does and the impact that it has and how it does it, it's like, that's wide open. And so I like being, you know, I'm also a very creative person, and I like the idea of just going, yeah, you know what, we can, let's really test these rules and make a few of our own, and you know, just be a little bit looser with that and see what comes of it.
I love it. And I think, Madeline, I feel like what you're talking about is so much based on the values in the company and the values of the founder, and that really when you are talking about the growth of Lunapads, not only are you considering the stereotypical measures of success, if you will, you know, in terms of revenues, in terms of size of the company and employees, in terms of impact on social change, but we're really talking about what are the underlying values in the company, and as you grow, how are those values honored in the different, in the different dimensions across what you believe in. So I love that we're presenting today really a different aspect of building a seven-figure company. One of the questions that I often get from listeners is, well, why? Is it worthwhile doing? Like, why is building a seven-figure company relevant, and why is that even a worthwhile consideration? And I think that you highlighted it really well today, in that, my feelings are always that as we are growing, it's not growth for growth's sake, but it's growth so that it supports your value, and so that the purpose that, you created a company gets honored and gets magnified, and you can ultimately impact more people through what you do. And so love the conversation we're having. And so I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to explore a whole bunch of things about leadership. And so we've taken a look at Lunapad as a company in terms of how it's grown and how it's expanded. But I'm also super interested in the inner journey of developing as a CEO. And I think I also want to spend a bit of time talking about working with a partner. I just love that, you know, you co-founded the company and now Suzanne, your partner, is running the company as a CEO. It sort of, you know, freed you up to do this different creative role. But I think for some people, they might also be wondering about, like, wow, how can you, like, how does that work? You know, how can you trust your baby to be led by someone else? So I want to spend a few moments talking about leadership, talking about how you work with a partner, and what are some of the inner journey that you've had to go through in becoming the CEO that you are, becoming the creative director and the founder that you are today. And so stay tuned with us, and we will be right back after these short messages.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network. You're listening to Felicia Lee on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is your host, Felicia Lee, and you're listening to Jumping the Gap Radio Show. And with me today is Madeline Shaw, the co-founder and creative director of Lunapads. And so, Madeline, I want to pick up where we left off about, you know, I know that you and Suzanne have been partners for a number of years now. And I'm just curious about for our listeners that are tuning in, and so maybe they're thinking that, hey, that sounds like a good idea to have somebody that you can, you know, you can talk to, you can brainstorm, and that they have skill sets that complement yours. You know, tell us about how you maybe transitioned from one person, you know, show to bringing on a partner. And what are some of the key lessons that you've learned that makes a partnership work well?
Okay, well, I'd be delighted to do that. So, yeah, I mean, so many things in life are just serendipitous, or at least appear that way, you know, and it's just that kind of magic feeling of like, oh, this is all going to be good. And it's funny because when I was on my own, a lot of people said, you know, Madeline, you really could use a business partner, and in the nicest possible way. And what they really meant was that, you know, I'm an extremely right-brained person, and I'm good at, you know, sales and marketing and sort of thinking of ideas and that kind of thing, but the actual nuts and bolts of operations and finance and things like that are really not my forte. And obviously without those things, you're sort of lost. I mean, you don't have really a business at that point, even though, you know, you're just a person with a bunch of ideas, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so when I met Suzanne, it was under a really great we were both taking a community leadership course, so there's that word again, and we were interested in, you know, most of the course was about, you know, particular civic issues pertinent to Vancouver, and it was designed by the Volunteer Vancouver and the Board of Trade to sort of groom boards, essentially, of nonprofits and charities in Vancouver and within the business community. And so I was the only entrepreneur there who showed up. My mom said I should go, so I went. And there were all these corporate people, and I was kind of intimidated. But I got to know Suzanne, and she was on my team, and she was my age, and just kind of looking into one another's worlds. Like, it was. Do you remember the Reese's peanut butter cups commercials from like the 1980s? Or, you know, it was like, hey, you got chocolate in my peanut butter, you got, you know, peanut butter in my chocolate. It was like this sort of clash of like the kind of out there entrepreneur artist struggling and the kind of dissatisfied corporate, but very successful person. And and we started to work together on a project, and that went pretty well. And then she offered to help me prepare financial statements to pitch Renewal Partners, who we talked about earlier, and because they had come and presented to our group, right? And so she, I think at that point, was sort of curious, but, you know, motivated to help. She knew, she really knew she could make a difference. And so by the end of all of that process, we were all partners. And I just knew one day I said to her, I'm like, what are you doing, lady? Like, why are you really in this and what's going on? And so she did at that point confess that she was interested in, you know, joining me, right? And it was one, it was just really exciting. Like, it just felt really right. And and we've been, I mean, I would say the main ingredient, as with any good relationship, is trust, right? Like, you know, just knowing that somebody is not going to flake on you and not going to do anything weird is huge, and not to be under, I guess, yeah, it's essential. And I think that in my observation in business, I mean, we've got money, right? Like, I mean, we are in this. We own real estate together. We have employees. We have tons of responsibilities, you know, like crazy. And I can see how the pressure of that, if there was ever some form of conflict, would be, you know, it's risky, right? And the way that we, I'd say the glue in our relationship is just kind of like an ongoing relationship. Like, we talk to each other every business day for sure. And usually sit down for at least, you know, I don't know, 15 minutes. If we haven't seen each other for longer, it'll be like we can talk for hours kind of thing. And we just need to, it's like the business, it's like we're parents and the business is our child. Like, it's the thing that we find the most interesting and that we're growing together. Like, we're just, it's this activity that we just do together that we find fascinating and emotionally rewarding. And it's not just about business. Like, we're really, really good friends, and we talk about, you know, what's going on in the other parts of our lives, you know, with our families and stuff. But we also create space. Like, we almost never see each other on the weekends, for example. Like, we're not part of one another's sort of personal life that way. Like, you know, I don't go to her kids' soccer games, and we don't go to the same dinner parties and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'd say it's a balance of, like, intimacy and space. And trust and transparency and just genuine respect. And also, and I think this is really important in partnerships, like, realize what they're good at and what you're good at, and kind of stick to your knitting kind of thing, like, get help from them, or, like, you know, and don't try and do the other person's job. Like, you know, and so that's another important thing is, in, you know, in our case, our, it was the kind of right-brained entrepreneur met the CA in our case.
Right.
And so it's like we do different things, like really different things. And, you know, I think sometimes people fall into business partnership because they have, they're both interested in the creative aspect of something, or they both love clothes, or they both, you know, like, it's almost, they're almost too aligned.
Yeah.
And they can't occupy different places.
Spaces, right, if you will. Yeah, I love how you shared that. And so I think also, you know, a question that I have, you know, another question on partnership before I move and talk about more also on the inner journey of, you know, what's been tough for you to grow as a CEO. Around partnership, you know, I think that sometimes it's easy to get into it because in the beginning you're very aligned with where things, you know, where you are with things, which is why you got into the partnership. Has there ever been a season or, you know, in, you know, a season in Luna Pad's history where the two of you have diverged opinions about where you want to take the company, and hence then it's not, right? Like, then it's like your vision feels a bit different, or have you always been aligned as to where you want to take the company and how fast do you want it to grow and what do you want, right? Like, what do you want it to look like? How do you reconcile differences with vision of the company?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess the way I look at it is, it sort of goes back to this notion of conversation that I expressed earlier of, like, how we talk about things. And, like, sometimes it'll happen that one or the other of us will get really attached to a certain thing or idea or aspect. And that's cool. I would say with respect to the overall vision of the company, like, we really want to create that together. And so it isn't like,
Right, it's mine versus
yours. We're
just yours,
so
right?
in it, yeah, yeah. At this point, and also, but what was really good is this notion of Suzanne becoming the CEO, which happened about a little over 2 years ago. And even though to some people they'd be cringing and going, "Oh my God, how did you do that?" or "Didn't you feel like badly about that in some way?" And I really want to talk about it a little bit because. I mean, it was a bit of a struggle for me at first, and the way it came about was actually through, we were working with a coach, and he suggested to me, he's like, you actually feel like you kind of need to go do something else for a while. Like, it feels like you're not, you're not getting everything off your chest, and this isn't necessarily the right place to be doing it. But from a really positive place, like it was this, anyways, story to do with unicorns and all this kind of stuff. And he was like, just go be a unicorn. Like, give yourself permission to do what you want to do. And which at first kind of scared me. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't, I until then thought of myself as like kind of one trick pony when it came to business. Like, okay, I had a good idea once and but I don't think I could do anything else, or I don't think I would want to start another business. And that turned out totally not to be true. And just feeling like, okay, you know what, the business with the strategy that we had with e-commerce and that kind of thing with Suzanne leading that made perfect sense, because to tell you the truth, I don't really love technology.
Yeah.
I don't. I love relationships.
I'm a people person.
And it's a really important thing, like, just to kind of go back to basics with stuff like that. It's like, okay, I'm running a technology-based company with my head in a screen all day, and I don't even love social media, to tell you the truth. Like, I recognize it has value, and I think it's great for lots of people, and I've been in and out of it in different ways. But sort of looking at it from that very practical perspective, it's like, okay, this company is being driven by things that I don't love.
Right.
And
yeah.
Right? But it's still having the impact I want it to have. Like, it's still, women are buying our products and they're using them and they're getting, way more in touch with their cycles, and they're, having all kinds of, healthcare stuff addressed through switching to our products, and that's all fantastic and thank goodness. And I can, just kind of walk away from that effectively. And that felt good to me. It's like, okay, good job. You built a good company that you can, walk away and somebody else can lead it and everything's fine. And so, even it was just within a few months of that I had a new vision, and that was really, really, like, so powerful, Felicia. It was almost visceral. And I don't think I would have been able to do that if I hadn't have been able to step back and kind of let go.
Yeah, you made space, right, to dream, and then the dream came true.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, it did, but it was a hard, place to be in. And I think for Suzanne's part, like, she felt excited about the opportunity to run the company on her own, but also kind of nervous. And so, the agreement we came to was that I would always be there to, bounce ideas off her and whatever, and just support the choices that she made for the business, and and then I would go off and do what I wanted to do. So it's been really great.
Well, I love that you are so transparent and shared that journey with us. I think often those are some of the things that don't get talked about, right? Like, what are the moments of discomfort, and what are things that scare you, and where are the places where you've grown this company and all of a sudden it's got a life of its own and it doesn't almost need you as much as as before. And so I always think of it as similar to the journey of parenthood and bringing up a kid, and all of a sudden one day you wake up and it's got a different personality and entity that, and they don't need you to feed it in order for it to function on its own. And so that, we often go through some of those identity type of seasons in our life and in our business. And so, Madeline, a question for you around leadership, around leadership and around, kind of where you're stretching. What is the one thing that you find is the toughest thing for you still, in the company? Mm-hmm. And how do you, and what do you do to work around it?
Yeah, wow, great question. I would say personally that I still struggle, like, with confidence sometimes. Like, you know, as I discussed in the beginning of this, like, I didn't start this journey as a business person. And even to identify myself as a business person is something I've kind of really struggled with. Like, you know, I've never trained in any kind of business, like, you know, and that, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, these are just weird stories that I tell myself. So when I'm kind of losing my mojo, I sort of fall back on the, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing, kind of thing. And I actually had a conversation earlier today with a brilliant, brilliant entrepreneur, the founder of Triple Flip Clothing, Linda, I believe her surname is pronounced Malchenko. And she is somebody you should definitely get on this show. And one of the things she said to me is she said, Madeline, we're all learning. We're all making this up as we go. It's not just you saying that. Like and it's like, yeah, no kidding, right? And to me, what defines an entrepreneur is just kind of having a greater tolerance for that, for the, you know what, I don't know what I'm doing exactly, but I'm going to keep going and I'm going to keep trying and I'm going to keep pushing. And I'm going to keep making stuff up, because what's making stuff up? It's creativity. It's innovation. You know, it's like, don't frame it as like some unconscious activity that is, you're just like, oh, I guess I'll do this today. It's like, no, actually, you have incredible gifts and resources, and those crazy ideas or things that you write off as being crazy ideas can actually be, are actually brilliant in their own way. Mm. You just need to kind of give them space. And so I struggle. It's embarrassing to me even to admit that, because I think a lot of people perceive me as being, you know, pretty, you know, just confident and open and self-aware and all of that. But there are days where I just go, oh my goodness, what have I done? And, it, you know, but I recognize it and I just look at it and I say, okay, that's how you're feeling right now. And, but actually the truth is that you're someone who, you know, puts heart and soul into everything that you do, and you are a good leader, and, you know, you just need to find the courage to, keep believing in your dreams. It sounds stereotypical, but just really do that. Like, keep believing in those dreams, because not everybody has them. I'm participating in a really amazing, actually, speaking of leadership, I want to do a little plug for this. Anybody who's listening who's online, have a look at think.org, and that's spelled without an I, so it's THNK.org. And it's called the School of Creative Leadership, and it started 8 years ago in Amsterdam and has just had its inaugural campus created and class here in Vancouver. And I am part of that, and I am loving it. Like, after so many years, I often thought of going and getting an MBA. Like, I just really want to kind of up my game and stuff, but I just could never quite bring myself to do it. Like, I just knew I'm not the right kind of person for, you know, what I consider to be more traditional modes of learning, as well as more traditional, you know, content about what business does and what it's for. And being part of this program is one of the best things I've ever done in my life. Like, it's just blows every preconceived notion that, you know, you may have had about leadership and who you are and what organizations do and what's possible out of the water, and sort of equally addresses the that inner world and inner journey that you've, you know, asked me some really thoughtful questions about, as well as kind of the latest thinking around design in general, so design thinking. And it's been incredibly, I just feel like I'm literally inhaling it, like, and it's with an international cohort. So there's only a few of us in it from Vancouver. Everybody else flies in from wherever they are. And so you've got the benefit of a much broader community and wider range of perspectives. So that's what I'm doing right now to develop my leadership, because it was just time. You know, I'm leading a nonprofit organization now, for example, and that has, you know, a very different business model from Lunapads. And, you know, I just really want to think about this venture in a very different way, and, you know, think bigger than I have before. So this program is really helping me to do that.
I love that. And Madeline, I think I hear the excitement in your voice, you know, as you're talking about this next journey in your life. And also, so appreciate that. I feel like when you shared that, you know, about the thing that you were the most scared of is, you know, that you feel that you're struggling the most with, or that you're working on the most, is confidence. I also felt that Probably a lot of people who are listening to it just collectively breathe a sigh of relief. They're like, oh, it's not just me that's struggling with this. And so I so appreciate that you shared that. I feel that, you know, to a certain extent, any of us that's working in an area or we're stretching ourselves or we're working, you know, we're not living in the comfort zone. And so as long as you're growing, then you're probably not in the zone where you're confident. And so I feel like any one of us who is in the zone of the lack of confidence, it means you're in exactly the right place. That means you're stretching yourself and you're doing something new and different and that you are growing and, you know, you're creating this rippling effect for those around you. So love that you shared that with us. And so, Madeline, with, you know, I wanted to also get you to maybe talk a little bit about, you know, for our listeners that are tuning in and they are, you know, in their journey of growing a seven-figure company. And so maybe some of them are there, some of them are on their way. And so I'm thinking one of the questions that might come up is, you know, how do they know that that they, you know, what do they need to put in place from a practical point of view to in order to get there? I can see that many people think about, yeah, I've built this small company, but I just can't imagine how I can, you know, scale it. And so if, when you're thinking about scaling, what are some things that have worked really well for you that you would want to share in terms of whether it's systems or whether it's processes or whether it's, you know, just how you've put the right people in place? Are there, you know, do you have thoughts about nuggets of wisdom for our listeners as they're thinking about scaling their company? What are some of the things that they absolutely must think about in order to, you know, before they start scaling?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really important to know why you're doing what you're doing. And that, you know, there's a great TED Talk and book called Start With Why, and that people can look, Simon Sinek, that I really identify with a lot, because people, we're fundamentally emotional, right? And so, you know, when we make decisions, we do things, we're typically not just reacting from our left brain, you know, analytical sort of place. We're feeling our way through things. And so really think about what that means to you in terms of, you know, what your business is about, and then how you communicate that to your customers and how you incorporate, it's a certain value system, right? And that into your, because that will define your corporate culture. And your corporate culture will define, like, so much of, you know, everything that goes on in your business. Like, so regardless, for example, of what type of e-commerce system you use, or whether you use Google Docs or whatever, you know, those things, it's like it will come down to the people and the sort of the motivation that they have to use those tools well and to achieve a certain kind of goal. So I think of it as alignment, really, and you know, maybe this stuff's a bit easier with an explicitly mission-based business, right? Because your why is front and center, like your why is the whole thing. And so, you know, for example, with, you know, HR, people come to us because of the why. They're not like, right. You know, nobody shows up at Lunapads, you know, by accident. I can tell you that. Like, people are very particular in terms of feeling called to support our mission. And so that really works for us. Switching over to, though, more practical things, because that is, you know, there is practicality. We work a lot in Google, and I personally have found it to be really, really helpful. So the Google Drive kind of system, everybody's on a shared calendar, everybody's in shared docs, everybody's, you know, it just is a really great way for us to communicate. So if you've got an organization and you're not using Google Docs, as in like shared documents and stuff, it's so fantastic. Like, we have a scrolling account of, basically, we just call it daily huddle notes, but it's essentially just a Coles notes of everything that is happening in the business on any given, like, in fact, on every single day of the week. And so, you know, obviously top line, we're looking at sales and number of orders and the kind of analytics. And then you scroll down and there's everything from soup to nuts, like just little notes about where's that order, or, you know, hey, I saw this article, and, you know, with a link to it and so on. And so it's just a really great way for everybody. Like, the first thing I do, I was out of the office last week, and when I got back, the first thing I did was scrolled through the huddle notes and just to see what was going on. And so I would advise that really strongly. And what's the other one? Make sure you've got access to capital, like, you know, in one way or the other, because, you know, if you're going to grow, you're going to need money. and just find that. I know it's very common business advice, like, you know, but really go and get your nail down your line of credit. Start asking people
for
money.
Before you need it.
Yeah, definitely.
Right before you need it. Yeah.
Do that before you need it. And also a great piece of business advice on that front is if you're going to someone to ask them for money, ask them for advice about getting money before you ask them for money. You know, so tap. I do that a lot. If I want something from somebody, I will typically go to them and ask them, you know, for their advice about that thing as opposed to asking them for that thing. And and then just see how the conversation goes from there. And because that's the other thing, too, is you may think, like, what am I going to say? Like, business relationships, any relationship's important, right? It's a sacred trust, and especially when there's money involved and somebody's, you know, really giving you their time, which is even more valuable than money. What, you know, really value that and trust that the people who are going to, you know, the customers who need to find you will find you, the partners who need to find you will find you, like whatever's coming to you is going to come. And what that tells me as I work is like, okay, you know what, if I just do my best and then let it go, I'm good.
Right.
You know, that's it. It isn't this like, oh, if only I had done one more thing. It's like, no, that thing was not part of the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something else. And I think that's really important to, I could have saved myself a lot of heartache. Like there's been a few times there's people who we were hoping would invest in the company or something else. And it's like, you know what? We, looking back in a couple of cases, we kind of dodged a bullet actually. And so trusting the process is really important along with trusting yourself.
I love that, and I so believe in that, that everything happens for a reason, and there's a season for, you know, different things, and so whatever doesn't work out, it ultimately means that there's something else that's, it's, you know, it's meant to happen that is more aligned with where you are supposed to go. And so, Madeline, I just loved our time together, and I also wanted to, you know, ask you, so if our listeners are curious about you and want to connect with you and want to find more about LunaPad, where should they go? What's the best thing for them to do to connect with you and find out more about the products that are carried in your company?
Yeah, thank you. So obviously the main thing is lunapads.com, and that is like an amazing shopping experience. It will change your life and possibly your perspective about how you even look at if you are a person who menstruates, then, you know, or you have daughters or that kind of thing, please go to that website. And there's also a bunch of other really progressive, reusable, beautiful personal care products there. So that's lunapads.com. We have a brand new website that we just launched about 3 weeks ago. The other place I would like to send your listeners is to gdayforgirls.com. And that is kind of my new project. I mentioned, you know, that something wonderful had happened. And so that's what happened. It's a modern, secular rite of passage series for girls ages 10 to 12 that is designed to empower and celebrate them as they enter adolescence. And so we had 2 G-Days in Vancouver last year. They were attended by 500 people. It was amazing. We had incredible content for girls to really boost their self-esteem and having big conversations about things like leadership and creativity and just kind of our dreams and goals and plus a whole bunch of other fun stuff. So the next G-Day is happening on April the 26th in Toronto, I'm proud to say, and with many, many more to come across the country. And so please, if you have a daughter or you know anybody, any girls in that age or parents of girls that age, please send them to gdayforgirls.com.
I love it. And so thank you, Madeline. Always inspirational, always practical, and always such a light in our society. And I want to thank you for being here today and sharing your journey in growing your company and also sharing your heart with us. And so to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. This is your host, Felicia Lee. I'll be back next week. Our show airs every Tuesday at noon Pacific, 2 p.m. Central, and 3 p.m. Eastern. Until then, feel free to connect with me on coachfeliciale.com. And if you visit my website, you're going to get tips, resources, and roadmaps on how to build a profitable, sustainable, and scalable business. This is the most important part that brings you fulfillment. And so we will see you next week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye for now.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. she's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.